Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
You know those friends you're introduced to by chance? Maybe it's work or maybe you share a mutual friend. And then before you know it, they are lifelong laugh, cry, good times, bad times friends. Well, that is Jenna Bush Hager for me. I've known Jenna for 12 years and we spent the last 2.5 as co-hosts. You probably see us when the show starts sitting at a table, but long before that, we're texting, we're sharing stories about our kids, we're collaborating, we're laughing together. We are a team through and through. I can't tell you how many people walked down the street and yelled at me, "Hey, Hoda, where's Jenna?" And that always puts a smile on my face. This girl, by the way, guys, is the real deal. She's Southern charm meets passionate humanitarian meets educator at heart turned natural journalist. She's the only person I know who could grow up around the White House and yet will never pass up some chips and queso. She's so down to earth. And today, she's right here with me. Jenna joins me to talk about life, love, and we look back at the lessons we've learned. I'm Hoda Kotb. Welcome to my podcast, Making Space. Hi, Jenna.
Hi.
I don't know why I'm thinking this in this moment, but I was just thinking when you very first, had your very first day at work at the Today Show. Mm-hmm. I don't picture you being intimidated, but I wonder if when you walked in on day one, if you were.
I mean, yes, I think. And I think I was well aware that I was coming from teaching, that it was a total shift in what I'd been doing. I think the other thing that was hard is that the very first time I sat down on the couch, they were announcing like, oh, you're joining the show and let's talk about you. And for some reason, I know this may sound weird now, but that made me uncomfortable.
Talking about
myself.
Yourself.
Like telling the stories. I was so excited because then we were flying to Dallas and I was going to tell the story of this little boy that I'd met there that I just loved. Mm-hmm. And that part felt natural to me, the storytelling about somebody else. But when they were talking about me, I just remember like blushing and feeling kind of embarrassed.
I remember the initial days. And look, NBC is a great place to work and everyone's really nice. Mm-hmm. But whenever you go into a new place and there are people who've been there for years and years and years and you're learning the skills, like I know that you're a worker, but I didn't realize how hard you worked until you came to NBC. I mean, you did not stop. You were like, I am going to work. I'm going to work until I learn all this stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, a therapist might say too much because I think, you know, coming into a new place, I'm also aware of what people might think about me. You know, I have a public life. I had had a public life really by not my choice, but I was born into one. And so, you know, I'm not naive. I knew that people might think, oh, you know, she doesn't need to work, you know, or she, why does she work hard? And so I think I tried to prove otherwise. And maybe people didn't even think that. Mm-hmm. You know, I had no idea, but I worked against that.
Right now you're thinking of your Maria Shriver conversation, aren't you? Yeah, because Maria also came from public life. Mm-hmm. And she knows, too, that feeling of like, you can work as hard as you want to work. Everyone's going to think what they're going to think.
Right.
You just do you.
And also, why are you doing it?
Why are you doing
it? Yeah, so, you know, she was in the makeup room with me one morning, and I had just flown in from somewhere, and she was asking me where I'd been, and I told her, and I was just sort of stating the places I'd been or what I'd done. And she was like, wow, that's a lot. Yeah. Like, why are you doing all that? And nobody had ever asked me that. Huh. And she said, I just want to tell you something. And like, I hope you don't take offense to this. But she said, I flew here yesterday and the TSA guy said, aren't you a Kennedy? She said, Jenna, I've worked my whole life to be Maria Shriver. But now I'm, you know, in my 50s and they still think, aren't you a Kennedy? So I don't know what you're trying to prove, but make sure you're doing it because you love it and it fills you up and not because you need to prove anything because, you know, you don't.
And so when she said that to you, what were you, what
I mean, it was like, I called my sister.
Yeah.
Because that Christmas before, my mom said, I don't know how I raised three workaholics, joking, because Henry obviously isn't her son. But all of us were like working in some way or talking about work or something. And, you know, my mom just, you could tell she would, like, that didn't sit well with her. That, you know, I think they're obviously proud that we work hard, but I think somewhere kind of deep in her soul and her intuition, she probably was thinking the same thing as Maria Shriver. Like, what are they doing this for?
That is really profound. So I don't think I've ever been anywhere with you where someone hasn't said, oh my gosh, I knew your grandfather. I knew, you know, I worked with your dad. And I wondered, you always have, you know, a beautiful smile and you're always wanting to hear how, what, oh yeah, I'll tell them. But I wondered, like, how does that feel?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's always been that way. Yeah. And it's so funny because Poppy actually just said something to me. She said, Daddy told me that you used to not like that people knew who you were. And now that you're okay with it. And I was like, that's probably true. I was also like, why are they talking about me? But that's probably true. I think in college in particular, you know, Barbara and I, we were normal kids. Like, we had a very normal childhood. We grew up in Midland, Texas, moved to Dallas. You know, it was interesting because we had grandparents who had big jobs, but they weren't in our day-to-day. So it was foreign to us, which is weird. And I know that that's probably hard for people to believe, but it was. And so much so that when my dad became president, he was like, don't worry, you can be normal. Like, he just wanted to give us what we wanted, but like, obviously we couldn't. But he, I think he really believed that.
How did they do that? Like, what did they do to make life normal? Like, how did they do it?
I think they, you know, they just never asked us to go on one, we didn't do one campaign or political event for our dad until we graduated from college.
Oh, wow.
I mean, when we were little, we might have done a thing or two for my grandfather. But once my dad ran for president, we didn't go to one thing. I mean, election night, you know, but during the campaign trail, we didn't want to be part of it. And he, that was okay with him. Like, he wasn't using us as his daughters for any sort of, you know, campaign picture or anything like that. We just weren't part of it. And I think, you know, I think they allowed us to have our lives. I think one thing that was really fortunate for Barbara and me is that college is this really selfish time.
Yeah.
Meaning you're trying to figure out who you are outside of your family, outside of what the expectations your household has for you. And so we could be in that, you know, we could like explore. And so we didn't really think a lot about all that came with our dad's job. You know, we could try to come up with our own identity. And so I think then it was hard. I mean, it was particularly hard for Barbara, who went to Yale, didn't know anybody. And she says even now, she's like, I don't think anybody voted for dad. And even her college roommates were in the front row of like some book event. I'm like, no, surely y'all voted for him. And they were like, no.
No, we did not.
So I think it was particularly hard for her. I mean, I went to a school where I was surrounded by friends I already had. But, I think we, that type of thing embarrassed us.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about how cool it would be to have a twin sister to go through life with. You know exactly what the other's feeling. She just had a baby.
I know.
She's been waiting for that so long.
I mean, it is, it's because we've done everything together, and particularly when we were little, you know, we were in sync. One of us wasn't older and therefore cooler and had a different reaction to something that was happening. We were, we had a really shared history because we were the same age. And so it's interesting how adulthood happens and how I just met Henry and that she didn't meet somebody. You know, she had a lot of boyfriends and people always asked about it. I mean, it was kind of disheartening, you know, to travel with her and people would say like, well, why aren't you married?
Painful. Oh God.
I mean, painful is the right word. And, you know, actually Condoleezza Rice once said that people asked her too, why she's not married. Even now, after she was Secretary of State, you know, after she's done all these things, like when you want to ask her about like the nuclear code or something, like, why
something
are you
else?
Asking that question? And I think, you know, one of the things that people assumed too is like, you know, why hadn't she had kids? And Barbara actually had decided before my grandmother died, she had a conversation with my grandmother where she had decided to have kids on her own.
She did.
And she talked to my grandmother about it. And my grandmother said, I think that's a really good idea. And so Barbara froze her eggs and was planning, if she didn't meet somebody, to go ahead and do it, you know, and then hopefully meet somebody else or, you know, I don't, that was her plan. And she was so, you know, she was so encouraged by our 92-year-old grandmother's.
Cool is that?
Yeah, that she thought, you know, that sounds like a good idea.
Do you miss her, your sister?
Yeah, I do. I mean, she's going to be moving back here.
Oh, she is. Okay.
So I'll be spending more time with her, but I do.
I was gonna say.
And it's interesting how our lives followed this very similar narrative as little kids and then took this, you know, I just started a family earlier. It'll be really fun to watch her become a mom and she's FaceTiming me with the baby, you know, feeding the baby a bottle and all of those, like wondering what we should do for Halloween, like all of these things that where our narratives are coming back together. And I just can't wait to watch her, you know, become a mom.
I know there's so many when you think of all these phases of life where you think I couldn't breathe without the person next to me.
Yeah.
And suddenly they're not next to you.
Yeah.
And she's coming back. I'm so happy. Yeah. I didn't know she was moving back.
Yeah, she's moving back here, which I think will be really
thank
great.
God. Yeah. Thank God. Coming up, I talked to Jenna about turning 40 when we come back.
At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
You're about to turn 40.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sit with you? How does 40 sit?
It's interesting. It feels, I mean, in some ways, I haven't even really thought about it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's interesting is that my dad had a big milestone at 40. He quit drinking the day after his 40th birthday.
Wow.
And I actually don't remember him ever drinking. Like, I was 5 years old, so my first memories I had no memory of him ever drinking alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to me because a lot of his stories, you know, to us, just in our family, sort of begin at 40.
Hmm.
I think he had like a new lease on life at 40, a really important revelation that he just couldn't, you know, drink. And so that's something. I mean, that sits with me. That sits with me because it was just a really important part of our family. Like that choice that he made really had ramifications that felt all the way down to us. And so that's an interesting thing.
Is that something that he talks about?
Yeah.
He does.
I mean, he does. He didn't, you know, he really just woke up on the day after his 40th birthday. I'm like, Henry, you better watch me on my 40th birthday because I don't really want to quit. You know, I don't think I need to. But he woke up and just decided that it didn't, suit him, that he wasn't as present of a parent or a husband as he wanted to be. And so, yeah, he talks about it. I mean, he talks about just how, and I think it's something that's super important that in my life to just take stock of the choices that I'm making. And it's something that I think about. You know, he had a conversation with me when I was younger and just said, you know, it runs in our family, alcoholism.
Yeah.
And so think about it, you know, just make sure that you're making those choices that are best for your family. And so I do think about that because I think there is this culture and with motherhood in particular, where it's like, you know, celebrates.
Right. Mommy juice, let's
mommy
go to the
juice,
park, we'll meet together,
or
it's a lot of fun.
Mommy drinks this.
Yeah, ha, ha,
and
ha.
I think because I had a father who was, you know, vocal about that choice, that it makes me just think about it in my own life, too.
I was going to ask you if anything scares you. And I wondered if that was on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. And we have, you know, other friends, people you know whose mm-hmm. parents were alcoholics. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have a pretty good grasp mm-hmm. on, you know, I don't feel like it affects me in a way. But my sisters quit drinking. Mm-hmm. My mom no longer drinks. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, it definitely is something that, you know, I don't think it's as scary because I don't remember
that part.
Yeah. My dad drinking too much. And I never really thought, you know, my mom, I don't remember my mom drinking mm-hmm. too much. So it's not like, but I think I'm definitely aware of it.
Yeah. Does anything intimidate you? Like, is there a person who could walk in the room right now who would intimidate you in one way or the other in terms of like, oh my God, I can't believe that person's here. I feel like we've met a lot of cool people.
I know, I'm trying to think. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because when I was first interviewed for a book that I wrote, Diane Sawyer asked me like who I'd be starstruck by. And I think she expected me to say like Justin Bieber or something, but he wasn't big then. I mean, I don't know who would have been like
somebody
the 2006
like
Justin Bieber, but Justin Timberlake, whoever it was. And I was like Toni Morrison.
You said that when you were that.
Yes. And because I loved Toni Morrison. And she actually said after the interview, she said, what are you doing now? And I was flying back to Washington, D.C., and she said, because I wanted to invite you to my house and have Toni Morrison come over. And I was like, damn.
Wait, first of all, I cannot believe that's who you said.
And she was shocked, and she and Diane Sawyer is friends with Toni, friends with Toni Morrison.
So have you loved, I know you love books because mm-hmm. you talk about it. Have you loved them forever?
I mean, yes.
Oh my God.
And Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye I read, I think my sophomore year in high school. And it totally changed my perspective on everything. And it's hard to even articulate why.
Coming up as we say goodbye to season one of Making Space, I share the most memorable moments with Jenna. Stay with us.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
One of the things I love about this podcast, and I love since we started, is I really do feel like I'm sitting in a therapy session. I'm meeting people, and I feel like, I almost feel guilty that this is a job. I'm like, oh my God, thank you. You know, you pay a therapist. I'm like, so how much? But I remember when Pastor Michael Todd mm-hmm. came on, he had such a profound effect on me. There was mm-hmm. something about how he viewed the world with intention, how mm-hmm. every day he set off with something in mind to do, not just, oh, well, it's another Wednesday. But one of the things that struck me the most was what he said about his relationship with his wife and how he builds on it. This is what he had to say.
If you're married more than 5 years, you're not married to the same person you married. Like, and we got a revelation that you keep changing every 5 years, and I needed to relearn who she was. What she used to like, she didn't like anymore. So I would do certain things, and I was like, man, that used to really work. Like, that used to really get you going. Like, what happened?
I mean, that right there,
yes.
Is that the plainest statement? Like, you've been with Henry for a long time.
It's the plainest, but when you told it to me—
yeah.
It was like a light bulb went off because I have said to Henry, but like, why aren't you as joyous.
Yeah.
When I first met Henry, I remember him like skipping.
Oh,
he was
real?
That. I mean, I don't know if he actually did it, but that's the energy that I got from him. He was so carefree. I mean, he just was filled with joy.
Yeah.
I think that's who he is.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, however many years later, 13, 14 years later, there's other things that have happened in life that have, he's not the same person. And I shouldn't expect that. But until you told me
what
the pastor said, I had never thought of it that way.
Me too. I did the same thing when it came to Joel because, and think about us too.
Yeah.
You're a completely different person than the person I met when you started working here.
Yeah.
You're totally different. You're new. You come in with a million ideas. Mm-hmm. You're so in charge. You are so in charge.
I am.
Yes, you're in charge, man. You have this thing, which I found really admirable because you could walk into a place where you have learned the craft. You've learned this craft faster than anyone I've ever seen. You have the craziest news instincts that I haven't seen with someone who hasn't been in this business for like 15 years. You're like, let's lead with that. Why don't we take a break here? Why don't we, all those little bits and pieces. But that's just how you've changed professionally. Mm-hmm. But I was just thinking about the same thing back to me and Joel. It's like, it's the exact same thing. Joel doesn't like the same things he liked.
Yeah.
We always ate at the same place. I never really liked the place. Yeah. Why are we eating there again?
Yeah.
I never wanted it. I did it for you. Because now we're just being who we are.
Yes.
We're not pleasing anymore.
Yeah. And I thought his thought about really getting to know somebody.
Yes.
And no matter who, like even parents.
Parents.
And friends and siblings, to really think like, okay, this is who I know you as, but who are you now? Mm-hmm. I thought that was brilliant.
You know, it's so funny. A friend of mine who I haven't spoken to in like a few months called me just to talk. And I said, well, tell me what happened. And she said, well, my mom passed in September. Mm-hmm. And it was like a knife in my heart. You know, when you realize that you weren't present for somebody's worst moment. And she said, I'm just going to say one thing to you. She said, my mom told the same story 1,000 times and we all rolled our eyes. And she said, just do this for me. Listen to your mom tell the story again. Whatever her story is, listen and let her tell it to you again and again and again. Oh. She just talked about how fleeting it all is. And it just struck me in that moment because as we go through our busy lives doing what we do, someone lost somebody and all she wants to do is listen to the same story just one more time.
Yeah, you know, Henry lost his dad during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And Henry's dad was had polio and was in a wheelchair Henry's whole life. And we watched this piece with Harry Smith together about this man living in a wheelchair who was paralyzed later in life. And Harry said, well, how do you dream? Mm. What are you doing in your dreams? And Henry burst into tears and said, why didn't I ever ask my dad what he dreamed about? Because his dad could walk, you know, just wondering. Like, and I think it was such a, I said to him and to everybody, like, listen to that story, but also ask your parents or your grandparents or whoever it is, what they dream about.
Yes.
Ask them about what they were like when they were young.
Yeah.
Have those conversations because you're right. You know, it's like time is fleeting.
Right. Okay. One of the other life lessons, and we learned a ton of them, was when my dear friend Maria and your dear friend Oprah were together. And I had so admired their friendship. But the thing that struck me was Oprah said that she only has three friends. And I think she has lots of acquaintances, lots of people who know her, lots of people who talk to her. She has Maria, she has Gail, and she has Bob, who was her trainer for many, many years, but is obviously her dear friend. Her circle is small and it's tight. And I'm not sure if that's a trust thing, like, I know these people will always have my back, or if that's all she needs.
That surprises me because there's so many people that feel like Oprah is their friend, you know, but I think it's like, you know, she's their friend, but she's these three solid.
Yes, solid.
Like North Stars almost.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I have that too, but I do have a lot of friends.
You do.
From a lot of different stages in life, and some of whom I'm, you know, closer with than others.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had parents and grandparents who really treasured friendships. I mean, both of my grandparents saw their best friend on the last day of their life. My grandmother had her best friend over to drink a Manhattan, her favorite cocktail. And my grandfather's best friend, Jim Baker, snuck into the hospital with something to make a dirty martini. And I think I witnessed, like, it was so ingrained in our, in my family, in the culture of our family, that friendship, I mean, they would say it in letters that I read from my grandmother. She asked about my friends. They included our friends in things.
Right.
So it's part of my DNA. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think I have space for probably more than three.
Yeah.
What about you?
I have a handful, but I do think when someone new steps into my life, mm-hmm. like you, mm-hmm. I love the feeling. Like, I think I feel like I'm a better person because of that. Because I think you can keep your tight circle. We all have our 2 a.m. phone call.
Yeah.
Like, who's your 2 a.m.?
Yeah, probably Farrell, my longest.
Yeah, and mine's probably Karen.
Yeah.
So it's, we know who our 2 a.m. Yes. phone
and
call
Barbara
is.
And Barbara, and probably,
and
you
Barbara
know.
And Hala.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And, but you're right. But we've got that, like, that core group. But I do think, I feel like I'm always enhanced when somebody new steps in,
yeah,
and says,
too.
Oh my gosh, I've got this. The other thing they talked about, Oprah and Maria both talked about, which is, I think we both could use, is how important it is to just stop for a second and stop sprinting through your life. This is what Oprah had to say.
Women don't give themselves the right to rest. I remember, I was working with this meditation therapist when I was doing tour last year, just before COVID hit hard. And we would do this big meditation in the arenas. And whenever he would say to the audience, you deserve rest, you could see tears flowing out of women's eyes. Men don't cry when they're told you deserve rest, but women start to weep because the very notion that you can give yourself permission to rest is a foreign concept to so many women.
Oh my gosh.
You feel guilty when you rest sometimes.
Yeah, it's so true.
You don't, when do you rest?
I mean, I try to get into bed as early as I can. Like, sleep to me is,
rest.
I like to go to bed early.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I try to find time to rest.
Right.
I had a mom who did not feel guilty about taking rest.
Really?
Like, my mom loved to be in bed.
Oh, she did.
Like, and, you know, meaning she would take, if she could, she would take an afternoon nap. No, she just didn't feel a lot of guilt about those types of things. I'm sure she did, maybe. She just didn't share it with us. But that, like, being in bed, we would be in bed on Saturday mornings and they'd read the paper and we would have our books. Like, that wasn't something she felt bad about. She modeled taking time. I mean, that's why she asked why we were workaholics.
Well, I do think that the sprinting through and like, I was looking at my my week this week and I was trying to block out some time that didn't involve anybody.
Yes.
And it was almost impossible to find like 1 hour, 1.5 hour.
Just to like read or do whatever you wanted.
And I started blocking it out just so I could try to do something, take a walk in the park, do something that didn't involve, and I love my kids and I love Joel and all the other stuff, but something that just gave you like a half a second just to be.
To have some space. Because I feel like if you do allow for that space, you are better.
Yeah.
You're better at all the other things.
Yes.
But she's so right.
I know. And the fact that women wept when someone said, you deserve that. You've earned that. That's yours.
And I think that might be a newer thing too.
Yeah.
Because I think and we see all these studies of women just, you know, in the last 2 years, exhausted, teaching their kids and taking care of their families and also working from home.
Yes.
It's like, it feels like it's come to a head almost.
We have one last one, Jenna.
Okay.
This is Sheryl Crow. And Sheryl Crow wondered if she was going to be a good mom. And she said she had to do something first before she could become a good mom. And this is what she said.
Before I could be happy being a mom, I had to be happy. And that was the first thing. And then being a mom has been the greatest gift and the greatest occupation. I mean, I have full respect for moms across the board.
And she went on to say, Jenna, if someone told her today that you will never make music again, she said, I will be as happy as I have ever been, because she talked about her greatest joy was those raising her two sons.
No, isn't that like the truth of it all?
I know.
Is to take stock in those things as opposed to like job titles.
I know.
Because if you don't,
I know.
You know, the other things are fleeting.
I know. Her mom kind of did what your grandmother did mm-hmm. with Barbara. Mm-hmm. Her mother said to her, listen, and she said it came out of left field, you go ahead. Mm-hmm. You have kids your way. You don't have to wait for somebody to make that part happen. And I think, Cheryl, if you were to ask her as a happy person inside, but I think she had to get her feet steady and, you know, do all the things that you need to do, therapy and whatnot, mm-hmm. until you feel like, okay. Because we've all had that feeling where, like, a guy would make it make me so happy if mm-hmm. I could just get the promotion, mm-hmm. and the promotion mm-hmm. would do it. Mm-hmm. Or if I could just buy the new house, if I could get the new house, I know I'd feel like a mm-hmm. different person. And at the end of the day, it never, ever,
no, it's internal.
Ever works. Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like the itch you can't scratch.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
Do you know that I know we've both had really long days, so we're all going to make space for ourselves right after this, but I just want to tell you, my last guest on season one.
I'm so happy to be here.
We are going to have season two. We're so excited. We're launching season two. We have a whole array of awesome guests who have just beautiful life lessons, just like you did, Jenna.
Well, I'm so happy to be part of this because I know how happy it's made you.
Oh, it's made my
day. It's so fun to watch a friend light up at something that maybe wasn't even a possibility a couple years ago. So I'm so happy to be part of this awesome podcast. And usually on the show, I like to stroke your graphic of your face, but we'll just end there.
Okay, let's end there. Goodbye, Jenna.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening and going on this journey with me. If you like what you've heard, and I sure hope you do, please give Making Space a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Making Space with Hoda Kotb is produced by Allison Berger and Ursula Summer, along with associate producer Olivia Ruchard, researcher Rachel Yong, and audio engineer Bob Mallory. Original music by John Estes. Bryson Barnes is our technical director. Minna Kathoria is our executive producer. Soraya Gage is our general manager. And Madeline Herringer is our head of editorial. We also want to give a special thank you to Mary Casolino, Libby Least, Tom Mazzarelli, Joanne LaMarca Matheson, Lauren Gamzee, Ashley Codiani, Missy Dunlop, Nick Offenberg, Aisha Turner, Reed Cherlin, Robin Gradison, Amy Wolf, Amanda Levine, Amy Bond, Lexi Rudolph, Chelsea Damberg, Amanda Sidman, Abigail Russ, Brittany Bosner, Katie Disler, Ali Detweiler, and Noah Oppenheim. And to all my guests, and especially to you guys, our listeners, thank you for making space for us. I'm Hoda Kotb. Thanks for listening.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.